Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have one of those incredible founders. You know, I have a huge amount of admiration and respect for what they've done and also for his journey too. I mean, it's really remarkable. You know, it's a company that has paved the way, you know, in the talent world, you know, a segment, they're a first mover. I mean, they have everything, you know, that you can dream of, no, when being an entrepreneur. And quite an inspiration conversation that we're going to be having. We're going to be talking about the founding story of the company, you know, the different rounds that they did, some of the crazy stories that they encountered with investors, and then also the ups and downs, you know, which are involved in essentially, you know, being an entrepreneur and running a hyper growth company. So building, scaling, financing, you name it. So all in between. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Steven Galanis. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So originally born and raised in the Chicago area, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Life was amazing. I grew up in Glenview, which is just north of Chicago. I had a really active childhood, played every sport you can think of, and you know, ended up playing hockey, baseball, and football through high school and hockey in college. You know, was involved with everything you can imagine, student council, you know, president. I was a debater. You know, high school and middle school and elementary school were all just absolutely amazing times. One of the, you know, things that really shaped me is kind of my background and heritage. My family's Greek. And unlike a lot of Greeks in Chicago, I have a dad who came over, you know, when he was really young. So he came over at 4 years old to Chicago. But on my mom's side, our family's actually been in the U.S. since the 1890s. So I'm third generation, which is, you know, very like old for the Greek families here, but that culture certainly shaped me, and especially my mom's side of the family, who are all entrepreneurs and actually all really worked in a space that I think when I tell a full story, you'll understand that this is the third generation that my family has been using the camera to make money. My grandfather, my dad, my mom's dad, Spiro, who was the person I was probably closest to in the world for until he passed, was an only child. And when World War II happened, he didn't get drafted because he was the last of his family name. So at 18, he ended up going into a factory where he learned how to use photography and x-rays to make sure that the planes that were going overseas were structurally sound. He then took that knowledge and started a wedding studio that is probably still the oldest in Chicago today. It's been around since 1945. One of my mom's brothers runs that studio today. But just, you know, being around an entrepreneur like that, you know, at the dinner table, the Wall Street Journal is on the table, CNBC is on the background, and, you know, you're talking shop and you're talking about the wedding that went another place and that competition and competitiveness and the all-in on entrepreneurship. And I learned that, you know, from the earliest ages sitting at the table at my Yayan Bapu's house. On my dad's side, it was the complete opposite. He is an accountant, you know, very steady Eddie type of guy. But his story is super inspiring to me. And he came over when he was 4. At the age 18, his parents wanted him to move back to Sparta. Like, I'm 100% Spartan. His parents wanted him to move back to Sparta because he was now a U.S. citizenship and he could go back to the village and get a big dowry. Like, they probably would have given, you know, his parents a bunch of goats and lambs and fig trees. So at 18, my dad decided to stay in the U.S. by himself because I have a second grade education in Greece, and he assimilated and he worked his way up from, you know, cutting fries at one of the first McDonald's to paying his way through college, $91 a quarter back then in, you know, 1968, and ended up becoming, you know, ran finance at a multi-billion-dollar company, and just is such a inspiration to me. And, you know, while he wasn't an entrepreneur, he just, you know, really showed me like the value of kind of compound interest and improving over time and just being like rock solid steady.
That's incredible. Now, in your case, you ended up going to Duke.
Yeah.
And not only that, you ended up being the guy that anyone, you know, wanted to know when it came to the nightlife. So how did that come about?
I think part of it is the timing. So my senior year of high school was right at the beginning of Facebook, basically. So at that point, you could only be on Facebook if you had a .edu email address. And I remember how crazy this was because, you know, like that first fall break, Facebook had come back and a lot of my friends were a year older, 2 years older, were coming back and they were all talking about how awesome Facebook was. So at that point, people literally used to apply to certain schools that let you in earlier just so you could put a deposit down and get an email address and get on Facebook. So I remember like literally putting my deposit down for U of I, even though I never had an intention of going there, just to get a .edu email address to get on Facebook. Now, the upshot of that is because I had Facebook starting senior year of high school, every single person I knew from high school and from college, like I got connected with, right? So at that point, you know, you'd meet someone, you'd friend them on Facebook, like you'd develop this relationship. And I ended up building this really big network early. And because I was the first class to have Facebook, like all 4 years of college, like it, you know, really was my senior year. And then coming in, it just allowed me to do things differently than people even 2 years older, 3 years older would have ever done. And it was a moment in time for those 4 years where it continued to just be a network for people that had either graduated college or were in college. So at that point, what we did was we created a Facebook group, me and my co-founder, Zach Moritas, who was a senior when I was a freshman. We started a group where we would basically throw different events. So it started with one night we went to the big bar on campus on a night they're usually closed and said, hey, can we do a drink special here? And we'll start throwing beer pong tournaments. And then that blew up. And to this day, if you go to Duke, Wednesday night beer pong is still probably the best thing that happens on campus. But over the years, we ended up aggregating 17,000 college students from Duke, UNC, NC State, Elon, all the surrounding schools in the Triangle area. And we were throwing, you know, over a dozen events a week on a recurring basis at all these different campuses. And once we built that network up, people trusted us, right? They knew that Spartan Entertainment, our business, it stood for value. So on top of that, we had a college box moving business. So at the end of the semester, we would hire a bunch of hockey, football, and wrestlers to come grab your boxes. We'd store them for you. And when you came back to North Carolina, we'd bring them back. We had a t-shirt printing company. We had a hot dog stand. At one point, we were even, you know, looking to start our own college music festival. So it was an amazing ride. And again, that was like one of the first times where I really, you know, it was very clear to me that aggregating these networks and building different businesses on it could be really valuable. So I kind of learned about network effect through that. And I learned about the power of social.
So then in terms of, you know, for you then, you know, it was about the financial crisis. I mean, it was not a good time to go out and secure a job. So you ended up going back to Chicago. You went there, you know, you were back home and eventually you become an options trader. But I wonder, you know, like how do you eventually get involved with the entertainment world? Because you were doing that on the side, which, you know, seems to be like complete different direction from maybe like the financial, you know, services, you know, space that you were, you know, going towards.
Yeah, totally. And again, this goes back to my grandfather as well. So I mentioned my grandfather was a photographer, but what he really loved was the stock market. Like he was a broker. He had one of those early handheld computers when nobody had it, like in the early 90s, watching his tickers every day. And his son, like he has two sons. So my mom's the oldest, and then he had two sons. One of the sons, Peter, went to take over the family business on the photography side. The other son, George, ended up moving out to LA after going to USC, and he got into film financing. So he was always on the movie side, but always on the financing side of the movies. And he's produced hundreds of movies, including Rambo, Conan, Lone Survivor, The Irishman, you know, just among those are just some of the ones that you would know, but, you know, probably dozens of movies that you've seen before. And I remember when I was kind of my second or third year in trading, and trading is a very hierarchical business. And I was an open outcry market maker. So when you picture the movie Trading Spaces or you see the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, the guys with the jackets making the hand signs, that's what I was doing. And when you're young, you're trying to establish yourself because there's guys that have been in there, you know, 20, 30 years and they get all the seniority and the tie will always go to them. So I was always just trying a way to make a name for myself down there. And my uncle had a movie called Lone Survivor that came out, I think, in 2013. And what I ended up doing was renting a movie theater out and inviting all the other guys that traded in the pit with me to do like a mini premiere, like a fake movie premiere for my uncle's movie. It was during that time where a bunch of the guys that I invited were like, Steven, this is awesome. Why are you here in Chicago trading with us? Why aren't you in LA producing movies with your uncle? So I did what any like enterprising, I don't know, 24-year-old at the time would do. I started raising money from those guys to invest alongside my uncle in different movies and television shows. And it was through that I met my co-founder, Martin Blenko, who had been doing production with my uncle before. And my uncle's like, hey, you guys are both young. I think you guys both bring a lot of complementary skill sets. And, you know, that's how we started doing business together.
So it sounds like the entertainment, you know, side of things was really appealing and really exciting to you. So why didn't you go double down on that? And what happened for you to all of a sudden switch from options to like being at LinkedIn? I mean, that's quite the turnaround of events.
Yeah, well, at that time, like options trading, there's a lot of great things about it. But I'll tell you the biggest thing that I noticed. I remember walking onto the floor of the CBOE, the Chicago Board Options Exchange, for the first time. And this is a trading pit where over 40,000 people used to go to work every day. And I remember walking in as a 21-year-old, and it looked like the dinosaur graveyard from Land Before Time. These trading pits were empty. The monitors were ripped off the screen. Pits where hundreds or thousands of people used to stand suddenly were completely empty. And it had been because of the impact of technology. So I actually literally remember as a 21-year-old having the very weird thought in my head that I wanted to be the last great open outcry market maker in Chicago. Nobody listening to your podcast says I'm going to be the last great tech entrepreneur. And that's because when you get to trade, when I got to trading, at least in that era, all the guys that were there, they were talking about how good it used to be, right? Hey, you missed the flash crash. You missed 08. You missed the 01 bubble. You know, you should have been here in the 90s. Everybody had the stories about how it was. And, you know, it was very clear that while options trading is still a massive industry, that particular part of it was a dying industry, and we were kind of last of breed. And, you know, very fortunately for me, because I was young, because I had, you know, I had shown an aptitude, especially in social networking, and I had a lot of close relationships from college, I was able to transfer into tech when LinkedIn wanted to create a team that sold this new enterprise sales product, Sales Navigator, into FINRA and SEC regulated industries. So what they wanted to do, they were specifically looking for people in finance that they could bring in their training program and teach them how to sell. And I got recruited to that program by a guy named Arthur Leop. Ended up being, he was my little brother in my fraternity in college at Duke. And after recruiting me to LinkedIn, when I had the idea for Cameo, he was one of the first investors, and then, you know, joined about 8 months later as our founding first employee and COO, and eventually became the president of the company.
So then how that does all transition into Cameo, you know, into really pushing Cameo, you know, getting going with Cameo? I mean, how was that the founding story?
Yeah. So I go back to my grandparents again. My grandfather died like maybe my sophomore year of high school. My grandmother was still alive. In 2016, we were celebrating her 89th birthday or 90th birthday. And then, you know, everybody's there. It was a great birthday party. And then like a week later, her caretaker was closing the door, and she ended up falling, cracking her head, and ended up passing away. And it was at my grandmother's funeral, actually, that we had the idea that would become Cameo, kind of the last place in the world you would expect to have your big idea. And as a backstory, my uncle, his business partner, and Martin, my co-founder, flew in from LA for the day for the funeral. And I'd gotten really busy when I was at LinkedIn, and my film production stuff just kind of waned off. And Martin, who I'd been doing it with at that same time, decided to become an NFL agent and get certified. And his whole idea was, if I could sign a big NFL player with a personality and a cool look, maybe I could find the next Rambo or Conan the Barbarian and basically sign as a football player the next Rock or Jason Momoa and turn him into an A-list action star. So that was his idea. He signed one guy. His name was Cassius Marsh. Cassius was a backup defensive end on the Seattle Seahawks, but he's, you know, he's got a great look. He's all tatted up. He's like stone jaw. He literally looks like an action hero. To Martin's surprise, like despite this guy having a big personality, he just couldn't get him any type of off-field income. And as an agent, that's where you make your money. You make your money from getting him endorsement deals. So he was really frustrated by this. And just to get some time with him, I agreed to drive him from the funeral home to the hotel he was staying at, Trump Tower, and then driving back. And if you know Chicago traffic at all, going downtown to O'Hare and back, like that is a long time in the car. And while we were in the car, Martin was telling me about this problem, and he pulled out his phone and he showed me a video of Cassius Marsh congratulating this executive at Nike on becoming a father for the first time. This guy loved the Seattle Seahawks, and this is a player on the Seahawks, and he was congratulating him on becoming a dad. And he shows me this video, and I'm just like, right away, that eureka moment went off, and I'm like, Martin, we should sell those. And that was kind of the beginning of the idea that would become Cameo.
So I guess for the people that are listening to get it, what ended up being the business model of Cameo? How do you guys make money?
Yeah, so on Cameo, we are a marketplace. The supply side of our marketplace are famous people. So think athletes, actors, creators, pop culture personalities. Each one of them has a price upon which they will make a video for you. The videos can be any length. It's not about that. But basically, as a consumer, you have 400 characters you can write in. You select the price that the talent says. The talent have 7 days or less to do the video. And, you know, they make 70%. We make 30%.
Hey, guys. So pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So I guess the, you know, for this too, I mean, you guys didn't have the best launch. Eh? It was saying a little of a disaster, you know, involved in the launch. So what happened there?
Oh, yeah, it was a disaster. So first off, I dropped Martin off at O'Hare, you know, after we have the idea. He calls me up immediately after he gets through security. He's like, you got to get on the next flight to LA. So I took the first flight the next morning to LA. He comes, picks me up from the airport. We go to Soho House in Santa Monica, and we just start, you know, we just start like ripping picantes, those margaritas that they have. And while at this lunch, we have the idea that would become Cameo. We really start formalizing it. And what we wanted to do is to create the marketplace for people's time. For X amount of money, you should be able to pay to do Y activity with Z athlete. And at the time, we were just thinking about athletes. You know, we felt if we wanted our favorite football player to come to lunch with us, like we should be able to do that. Or if I want to FaceTime them, or I want to call them, or I want to buy their merch, like there should be a place where you could do all of those things. The personalized video message was one of the many Y activities, but ultimately we decided to focus on that first because we felt like it was requiring the least out of them. You weren't making them move. It could be asynchronous. Like there were just a lot of you're on their phone. You're not on their agent's phone or your manager's phone. So there's a lot of reasons we picked that. And the other thing too, is every time we kept showing people these videos, they'd be like, whoa, like that's so cool. So we start dreaming up this marketplace. And, you know, for any marketplace founders listening, you guys will totally, you know, empathize with the chicken and the egg that happens every entrepreneur that's trying to build a marketplace. You got the supply side and the demand side. I remember going around telling people about the idea that would become Cameo, and they'd be like, so what's your business? I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if Michael Jordan could wish you a happy birthday in a video message? Like, oh my God, that'd be awesome. How much is he? Well, we don't have him. Well, who do you have? We don't have anybody yet, but that's what we're going to build. And then on the, when we're talking to the talent, you know, they're like, who's on this? And nobody's on it. Who's made money? Nobody's made any money. So it just, you have this chicken and the egg. And very fortunately, Martin and I were able to use our personal networks to get a couple people to say yes before that. Now, that said, Martin and I are both non-technical, right? So we have no ability. We're just two guys with an idea. And I ended up calling upon Devin, who was a classmate of mine at Duke and a brilliant engineer. He'd been at Microsoft. But most interestingly for Devin was he was one of the original stars on Vine. So he had over a billion loops on Vine. His roommate, Cody Coe, another one of my classmates from Duke, ended up having 4 billion loops on Vine. So these guys were like really famous, but they never were able to make money from it because there was no monetization on Vine at that time. And one of the striking memories I have in this period was I remember going to Las Vegas with Devin, Cody, our friend Adam Q, and myself, and we were at the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. And I remember Cody Coe took a picture of us and posted it on Instagram. And at this point, I didn't know to turn my notifications off or all the things that happen now. And my phone, which was fully charged, overheated and died in my pocket because there was such a high velocity of likes, comments on this picture I was tagged in that my phone literally, like, it was a big night out in Vegas. My phone died in my pocket. And that was a moment where I'm like, whoa, there's something interesting and different about creators. And you know, Devin was really motivated at this point to kind of build this marketplace. So as we think forward to, you know, kind of the MVP, you know, Devin builds a simple website, Martin gets Cassius Marsh, the first talent to join. When we launched Cameo, it was with one person, Cassius Marsh. And we always had the idea that in our marketplace, supply was more important to aggregate first because the supply are famous. They have hundreds of thousands and millions of followers on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitter, and they could turn their followers into our customers for free. So that was always our belief. So I'll never forget, it was like May 17th, 2017. I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona, trying to close the second person on Cameo, a guy that went to my rival high school that was playing for the Cleveland Indians at the time. I'm literally at dinner with him during launch night. Devin, Martin, and Cassius are in Devin's apartment in Venice, California. I'm at a steakhouse in Scottsdale, Arizona. I have Google Analytics up on the table, you know, kind of like I'm still having the conversation, but I had it up so I could see what was going on. And there were two dots. There was one in Scottsdale, one in Venice Beach. Cassius sends the tweet out with that video, the first one that gave us the idea. And he's, hey, fans, I'll make one of these for you for $20. He sends that video out and, you know, he's got 100,000 followers at the time. And we're just expecting all the, you know, people to come to the site and to just get going. And crickets, nobody came to the site. It was so bad that we're texting each other on the side and we're like, I think Google Analytics might be broken. So I'm like, how about this, guys? I'll sign off and then tell me if the dot goes away. And then if I sign back on, so I sign off, the dot in Scottsdale goes away. I go back on, the dot in Scottsdale comes back. And it's, or no, it's not broken. Nobody's coming to the site. And on top of that, a bunch of trolls started talking shit to Cassius Marsh. You're a professional football player. You make $1 million a year. Why are you charging $20 for your fans? This should be free. Shame on you. So all these people start kind of like trolling him online. Cassius gets like frustrated. He's, fuck this, I'm out. And by the way, he put the first $25,000 into the company. So now we just lost our first investor. We lost our first talent. Martin, my co-founder, was his agent. So now he's got this problem on his hands where he's like, did I just lose my only client money? So he basically is, fuck you guys, he's out. So now I'm down a co-founder, I'm down the only talent I have, I'm down my only investor. And Devin and I are sitting there being like, well, you know, I guess maybe I should have left my job at LinkedIn before we knew that there was demand for it. So we're kind of texting. And by the way, I'm in the middle of pitching this guy at dinner while this is going on. So I couldn't have felt lower, but I've got to project like confidence and show the vision that I had conviction would work. And all of a sudden, a dot popped up in Renton, Washington, which is up near Seattle. And this dot was just on the site for what seemed like an hour, right? And by the way, you go to Cameo today, there is like hours and hours of videos you can watch and people you can browse. You can window shop all day there. At this point, it was like going to a Google form. What's your name? You know, what's the message? And put your credit card in. That's it. There was one person. There were no videos. It was like, it was as simple an MVP as it got. And you know, I remember just being like my elbows on the edge of the table. Is this guy going to buy? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? And then the dot just disappeared. And I had this just sinking feeling my stomach. I'm like, God, we even got someone on and they didn't want it. Like, I was dejected. And then about 5 minutes later, my phone starts vibrating and I see that I get a DM on Twitter from this guy who goes, hey, Steven, or he goes, hey, Power Move, which is what we were calling ourselves before we, you know, named ourselves Cameo. He's my Cassius Marsh is my daughter's favorite player on the Seahawks. It's her birthday on Thursday. This was a Tuesday night. I'm trying to book, but your payment processor is not working. So I'm like, tell me the message. Like, we'll take care of it. And then, of course, Cassius and Martin were so mad at me and Devin that, you know, they weren't responding to our texts. 2 weeks go by. We don't get the video. Finally, Cassius turns the video around. It's honestly the worst video I've ever seen. You know, he's, hey, Reese, sorry for missing your birthday. Thanks for being a fan. It was so bad, I didn't even really want to send it. I ended up sending the video to the dad. And about an hour later, I get a message back from him. And it's a video of his daughter watching the cameo. And she gets so excited, she literally starts crying. She's got half her hair is green, half her hair is blue. She's in a Cassius Marsh jersey. She's watching the video and she cries. And she ends by saying, Daddy, she goes, how did you do that? And he goes, Daddy's awesome. That's how. And if you watch this video, it's better than any Super Bowl commercial that we ever could have made. And I'm so grateful for the fact that this guy, like, when it felt like we didn't have product market fit, that was a very strong sign to say, hey, the website didn't work and they wanted it so bad that they got in my DMs and we made it happen. And even though it wasn't the best video ever, like the emotion that it elicited gave me absolute conviction that if we could make one person feel like that, we could make millions and hopefully billions feel like that at scale.
And obviously the rest is history, you know? Now, in your guys' case, obviously to build a marketplace, it takes money, right? To build that supply demand. How much capital have you guys raised to date?
The business has raised over $200 million since we started. Yep.
And I know that there's been some really incredible stories. You know, one, you know, at the Series A level and then with Massa. Not pitching him, but getting pitched back. So walk us through those particular stories that happened on the fundraising.
Yeah, I'm going to tell a few and I'll even tell one before the Series A that I just think is so important. So one thing we didn't get too deep on is LinkedIn was really the formative experience of my professional career. I remember walking into LinkedIn on my first day and this guy named Mike Gamson, who is the global head of sales at LinkedIn at the time, he's in Chicago where I am and all the new hires are there. And then those that aren't in Chicago are kind of like blue jeaning in. This is before Zoom, blue jeaning in at the time. And the first thing he says when he gets on stage, he goes, welcome to LinkedIn. 2 years from today, none of you will have the job we just hired you for. We know that. We support that. And at LinkedIn, we literally have the profile data to prove that's true. So our job in the next 2 years is to make sure that we work with you to get the skills you need for your next job, whether it's internal or external. And oh, by the way, all we ask is crush your job. And when you're ready for the next thing, whether it's here or somewhere else, recruit someone better than yourself to take your place. And that was like, that was such a huge change. I mentioned when I was trading, it was such a fixed mindset. You know, you miss this. And then on LinkedIn, they're talking about the economic graph and providing, you know, helping the world's professionals become more productive and successful. And it was like mission-driven, growth mindset. It was just, I just sucked it all in. I couldn't get enough of it. And, you know, the really interesting thing that happened was my last day at LinkedIn. So I have this idea for Cameo. My last quarter there, I was probably the worst employee at the company. You know, like my mind was somewhere else. All the guys at work and gals that were around me, like when we weren't on calls, we'd be talking about what this thing could be. And, you know, we wanted to almost build this company while working at LinkedIn. And one guy wanted to run sales and one wanted to run marketing. And frankly, like, you know, if you looked in the next 4 years, almost all of those people ended up coming to work for us, you know, over the years. So we ended up having a lot of LinkedIn people leave. But I remember being, it was New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, 2017. I'm still at LinkedIn. And this guy, Will Hearn, who I worked with at the time, we're in a hot tub in Nicaragua with a bunch of our coworkers that are there. And he's, Steven, this idea is too good. If you don't leave to go start it and somebody else builds it and becomes a billionaire, could you live with yourself? And nobody had ever asked me that question before. But it was so obvious the answer was no. Like I remember my brain chemistry just changing instantly. So I remember I left Nicaragua. I go tell my parents, that I have something to show him. And it was the letter that I'd sent to my team letting him know I was going to start Cameo. But the craziest part of it was the day I left was my exact 2-year anniversary of my first date there. So in this case, Mike Gamson's prophecy at least ended up being true for me. 2 years to the day is when I left to go do that. And you know, I wrote about this to my team. I published that post on LinkedIn. If you guys go to my LinkedIn, you can literally see the note that I wrote telling the story I just told. And a quarter into it, when we had sold maybe 100 videos, I get a cold call from Mike Gamson out of nowhere. And he just wanted to check in on how the business was doing. I pitch him on it. And, you know, to my surprise, he's, "Steven, I like this business. I'd like to make a small investment in it." And at this time, we'd now raised 150K of friends and family. And, you know, I think he's going to say 25K, 50K. And I'm like, "Mike, we don't really need more money. We're burning $500 a month. We have 150K in the bank." He's, "Steven, you don't understand what you're building. If you're going to build this thing and it's going to be what I think it could be, you're going to need a lot more capital. So I'd like to make a small investment in your business." I'm like, "All right, well," and he's this huge mentor and someone I really looked up to. So I'm like, "What are you thinking?" He goes, "I'd like to put $500,000 into the business." And, you know, this is like on the phone. I remember like those words came and I just like, it was just unbelievable. And, you know, he was excited about Cameo. He's excited that we were building it in Chicago. And that was the investment that like changed everything for us. I don't think I could have built this business in Chicago. I would have had to be in LA or New York. So that was huge. And then, you know, for a while we were just kind of this thing in Chicago that people knew about, but it was under the radar. And, you know, the VCs right away got excited about it. I remember one of our investors, like right after that round got done, Chicago Ventures, which was a firm that was in the same building as us, this guy named Jackson Jin, who was on his second day of work, got locked out into the office and he ended up knocking on the door to see what was going on. You know, he spent 3 hours with us the next morning on his, he was literally working in venture for 2 days, fresh out of undergrad. He walks into his partner's office and he goes, "The next Snapchat is 100 feet away from us. If we don't invest in this company, I'm leaving." And they're just like, "Kid, like you just got charmed by the first entrepreneur you ever met. That's not Snapchat, no fucking way." And he's, "Trust me, take a meeting." So I end up taking a meeting with a guy named Ezra Goldstein, who would go on to lead my seed around. And, you know, on the spot, he's, "We want to put $1 million in," after I ran him through everything. And, you know, we didn't need the money. So we took 100K and then they wanted to get ready to lead our next round. And ultimately, you know, that kind of set the tone of all the good early stage investors in Chicago backing the business. I remember our seed round was a very competitive round amongst these firms. The guy from Chicago Ventures that had wrote my check, you know, he was like, "Hey, I'm going to leave to start my own fund. Can I lead this?" And Chicago Ventures, we'd had the relationship with, and Origin, another firm that we loved, like they literally were like, "We will do anything. Here's a, you know, here's a blank check. You put any number you want. Like, we got you. We've got great conviction." And luckily, we were able to get all three on the cap table. So now we're kind of this hot thing in Chicago, but like the world doesn't know about it yet. And that all changed about 6 months later when I get a call from this woman, Jana Masterschmidt. Jana is kind of a legendary operator. She was early exec at Twitter through the IPO. And she's part of a syndicate called Hashtag Angels, which was all the female execs at Twitter. And they invest in different startups. And she had discovered Cameo that summer. She literally DM'd me every day for 30 days till I responded. And she's like, "You need me on your cap table, trust me." So I ended up talking to her. There's a bunch of family connections. She randomly ended up in college at U of I. She worked at my uncle's bar. It was like, she's from the Midwest. There were just so many things. So I ended up letting her put some money in. And that was one of the best decisions I ever made, because that Labor Day weekend, right before Labor Day weekend, I get a call from her and she goes, "Steven, Jeremy Liu from Lightspeed would like to meet you. You know, I just showed him Cameo and he thinks it's awesome. Can I give him your email?" So I'm like, "Absolutely." And by the way, my early stage investors had put together a list for Cameo of every firm in the world and every partner. And the firms were kind of ranked 5 to 1, 5 being the best. And then each partner was ranked A to F on their fit. And there were only like 4 or 5 5A people that like we had on our metric. And, you know, it was Reid Hoffman. He had founded LinkedIn. It was, you know, it was Matt Kohler at Benchmark. You know, he had done like Instagram and WhatsApp. So it's like that level of people. Jeremy, of course, you know, Snapchat had just IPO'd around that time. So, you know, he was very clearly there. And I get an email from Jeremy and he goes, I just heard about Cameo. It's brilliant. Where are you in the world? We're having breakfast tomorrow. And I happen to be in San Francisco because we were working on this deal with YouTube. So I end up meeting him at the Battery for what I thought was going to be like a 15-minute coffee. I have to fly to LA to go to a wedding. And I'll never forget this. Like, I get in, I start getting into my pitch, and Jeremy cuts me off in the first 30 seconds. He's like, no, Steven, I get it. I know what this is. I've been looking for a business like this for 10 years. Let me tell you why we'd be the best partner for you. And we end up having this two-hour conversation. I'm watching my flight because I'm about to miss my plane at this point. I got to get to my buddy's wedding in LA. And it's time to go, but Jeremy's not done. So he goes, Steven, here's what's going to happen. When you land in LA, you're on the American flight. You're going to walk to the United Terminal and go meet my partner, Nicole Quinn, outside of gate 70 in the United Terminal at LAX. She wants to meet you. So I end up landing in LA. I walk from Terminal 4 to Terminal 7, and I meet Nicole Quinn there, who ended up becoming, you know, a longtime board member, led my Series A. Nicole just absolutely gets it. You know, she was on Lady Gaga's board and Gwyneth Paltrow's board. She'd become like the Silicon Valley meets Hollywood, you know, person. And we had some good friends in common. And, you know, we have this great conversation. Then I'm like, hey, I got to get to the rehearsal dinner. She's like, all right, and this is Labor Day weekend. She's like, Steven, I'm going to be in Chicago Tuesday morning to come see you. And, you know, sure enough, Tuesday morning, she's in her office, spends the day with the team. She then invites me to Sand Hill Road to go pitch the partnership the next week. And after that meeting, I'll never forget, Jeremy and Nicole walked in. And by the way, we didn't have a pitch deck. I didn't have finance. There was nothing. I remember somebody asked, what's your five-year plan in the meeting? And Jeremy's like, they're not pitching us. We're pitching them. And Jeremy came in with Nicole and he said, Steven, the partners are unanimous. We're excited to lead Cameo Series A. We think this could be Snapchat, but bigger that Instagram can't copy. And we want to be the partner to help you build that. And coming from him, like that was just, it meant the world. And once we got that Series A from Lightspeed, it totally changed our standing among any of the other kind of firms in Chicago that were startups. And we were just it was just a different level. You know, tier one investors weren't investing. You know, I don't think Lightspeed had invested in Chicago like that since Grubhub's like Series A and, you know, Benchmark, same thing. Like Sequoia had never backed a business in Chicago early stage like that until one of our alums ended up coming and starting his business. So it was something that like kind of changed the ecosystem. And we were talking about Endeavor earlier. And one of the things that we love at Endeavor is like coming in, building these like tentpole companies. And then some of those people are going to, you know, take the experience they got and go start their own. And I've just been really proud and gratified that we've been able to do this in my hometown. And so many amazing people have come through our program, hopefully taking a lot of value. And now some of them are, you know, running their own really cool companies.
Now, obviously, you've been running the business for over 8 years. And, you know, with the ups, with the downs, you know, everything in between. But if I was to put you back, you know, in time, and I put you into a time machine, and I bring you, let's say, to 2016, where you guys were getting started with a business, and you could give one piece of advice to that younger self, to that younger Steven, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
That's a good question. Look, there's so many different things there, but in my experience, the one thing I've seen over and over again is hire for ceiling, not for a resume, right? I've just seen that a million times, right? There's so many of the best hires we ever made were, you know, someone starts as a, you know, they're a PR intern and, you know, 6 years later, they're the chief of staff of the company, right? Or, you know, one of the best people we ever had on our talent relations side was a bottle service girl bartender that had never worked in tech or had a corporate job. And we brought her in and now she leads all creators at another big company. You know, probably one of my all-time favorites that we hired was supposed to be a one-year study abroad intern when it was just me at a desk in Chicago. And, you know, she loved it so much that when she had to go back after a year, she dropped out of school, ended up opening up our UK office and eventually would come to run the talent team for us. And, you know, I totally appreciate what experience gives, but when you're doing like really innovative things, sometimes that can be overrated. And, you know, while I've learned a lot from some of the leaders that I've brought in, I would have just you know, if I look back on it, there's probably times where I took people out of the game too early because we were in position to go make that big hire. And in some cases, like, that caused, you know, really foundational building blocks to not have a place at the company anymore. So that's really what, you know, what I continue to remind myself about.
I love it. So, Stephen, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi and learn more about Cameo, what can you tell them?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can follow me on Instagram or Twitter. On Twitter or X, I guess now, Mr. 312, that's the Chicago area code, or just my name on Instagram.
Amazing. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.